Chris Ranji, Amy Mark Scores with you on a Wednesday. And we mentioned earlier, several things. Covenant House, our charity of the week last week, and the great work they do with at-risk youth in St. Louis. We also mentioned our lemonade stand challenge. And someone who stepped up in both of those areas is Alderwoman Shamim Clark Hubbard of the 10th Ward in St. Louis, who is very familiar with the Covenant House, did one of their sleep outs, also stopped by a lemonade stand. And first, Alderwoman, thank you for joining us in Studio B.
Thank you for having me.
And second, I asked you this when you walked in right off the air, and I do want to start with, I know in Ward 10, your ward hit very hard by the tornado. How much of your time right now is still focused on tornado efforts?
Yes. Again, thank you all for having me. You know I love being here. I would say it's still 90 to 95%. You know, if you lay a map of the path of the tornado on top of a map of the 10th Ward, 10th Ward has eight neighborhoods, and all eight neighborhoods got hit by this tornado. So that's from Clayton Road and Skinker for me, down to Martin Luther King and Taylor. The disparity, being able to meet people's needs, being able to answer the call. I still get calls. I'm still getting calls that run the gamut from home repair to debris pickup to connect me with FEMA to I'm still trying to get my power back on. Different calls I get every day, all day. And I'm just grateful to be in position to be able to answer them and connect the dots for them.
How has the support been outside of the work you're doing in terms of federal help, city, state, whatever it's been? Because we know initially it seemed to be good. I mean, we were hearing from the governor and from Josh Hawley, who was on site. And, you know, it's been some time since it happened. Yeah. And a lot of that tends to wane. So where is it now?
So I'll say it's probably so many different perspectives on that. For some people, it's never going to be enough. You know, for the people that wake up with this every day and have to navigate this every day, it will feel like it's never enough. But again, connecting those dots and meeting those immediate needs, day-to-day quality of life, setting them up for the needs that they need and the resources they can get to move forward, I think is where there has been a great, continues to be rather a great response. I can't say personally that there's been anybody that's called me that I haven't been able to. If I can't answer the question, I connect them directly to somebody who does and who wants to and who's willing to, which makes the difference. Mm-hmm. There's still day-to-day quality of needs, organizations, grassroots, community people that are on the ground, you know, helping those people with that. FEMA is still here. SBA is still here. So it's just, again, the city mayor, Spencer, has now announced and continues to roll out programming and products that can help relieve people as they move forward. So it's just, again, I know for some people it's not enough. But I know that not doing it is worse. Not helping is worse. Saying, okay, it's not enough and we're not going to do anything would be detrimental. So again, just continuing to move and push people forward to give them what they need has been the game changer for everyone.
So I have a couple of friends who are in the Central West End whose homes were, if not destroyed, just made unlivable, but they do have insurance and they do have resources. Yeah. So here are people that have the resources and they're being told that they're going to be out of their house for at least a year. Mm-hmm. So one of them had to rent a house in another, you know, part of town. Mm-hmm. So my question is, if that's people with resources who are out of their homes for a year, what about people who may not have had insurance, who don't have resources? Where are they living? Mm-hmm. Where are they going? And how are they going to be able to stay out of their homes or until either their homes are repaired or knocked down and built again because some of them can't be repaired?
Yeah. Amy, that's something, again, that keeps me up at night. That's something that I deal with every day. There's a real disparity in the way that I see my constituents in the 10th Ward alone being able to respond, the position they're able to respond from. And so, again, while, we have some people with insurance that have housed them and they're getting ready and they're getting their homes rebuilt, I have people that are still standing outside their homes like it's May 16th. They really don't know which way they're going to turn and go. And even the more you connect with them with that, the reality is if you were already in a little behind prior to May 16th, whatever you get now and in the future, it may not bring you even up to neutral ground right. rather than on the head. So again, it's case by case on this. I can't say that enough. And just, I don't want anybody to feel like there's no help for them. There is help. Unfortunately, there's going to be just some very hard conversations. And unfortunately, what I've seen in studying other tornado hit areas, because I look to see, you know, like, what can we do? There's a level of displacement that Lord knows St. Louis doesn't need. But when you think about the reality of these three-story, three-course brick homes that will have to be some heartbreakingly torn down, no amount of money FEMA can offer. Because I'm not making that up. Their cap is $40-some thousand. They can't rebuild a three-story, three-course brick home. You know, so things like that are just real conversations that we have to have case by case with people. And I want everyone to know that nobody has to do this alone. There's help out here.
So what can the community do? Because a lot of people did pitch in right away. And for this first several weeks after, I don't know if I'm assuming the pace has not kept up the way it was initially, which is usually what happens in a disaster. Time goes by and, you know, things fall off. So what do we need? What do they need? And how does the community help provide it? If anybody's listening and wants to do something.
Well, I ain't too proud to be. I'll say there's two organizations on the ground right now today as we speak that are still doing the day-to-day, meeting day-to-day quality of life, from clothing to food to health to mental health to wellness. And that's Dr. Punch, the Brick, and they have formed what they call the Oasis in Fountain Park. So if you can look up 314 Oasis or Dr. Punch and the Brick, they are, again, daily on the ground meeting immediate needs in Fountain Park. That's one of the actual Fountain Park. location. And then Dr. Marty Casey and the Ungun Foundation, St. Paul AME Church, it's at 1260 Hamilton Avenue. They have a Heal STL. They have a free store. And so it has everything you need that you can go in there, in addition to meeting your needs with maybe your application submittal for FEMA, SBA, a Red Cross, anything that you may need, again, over there. These are two organizations that I know, to your point. Everybody kicks in, everybody goes and makes their social media posts. Everybody does that the first, but that absolutely dies off. Mm-hmm. That's the nature of it, you know? Mm-hmm. And so being able to meet people's needs, still that, and then pour into the funds. There are funds, and I don't want to speak on any of them specifically without knowing the contact information, but I know St. Louis Foundation has a fund that they're still raising money in. Urban League has a fund that they're raising money in, and then they'll be programming that money out, I'm sure, into the community, directly into the community. And also the Northside Resilience Fund, which right now, if you had a red sticker on your home, you can apply for an immediate $3,000 cash stipend that you can get directly deposited into you, that there's no barriers on it. You can use it for whatever you need it for, which, you know, you all know from my GBI conversations how I feel about that and the integrity of empowering people with being able to fund and help whatever their meet their needs is. That's something that's going on now that I think that you can pour into, and that's through InvestSCL.
Well, I know we could talk so much more about this, but we also want to have you share about your experience with Covenant House Missouri, which is an incredible organization that welcomes youth who run away, young people who have been trafficked, high risk, at risk, experiencing homelessness, and the work that they do. You did one of the sleepouts. Can you describe for our listeners exactly what that is and what that was like?
It was one of the most humbling experiences I've ever had in my life. I remember the day like it was yesterday because it was cold. It was raining. And we literally slept in boxes, cardboard boxes, outside of the Covenant House, so off of King's Highway and Maffitt. And I was invited to do it, not by them, but also by my former colleague, Alderman Rohde, who I have a lot of admiration for. I still call him and bug him today about things. And so I tease him that this is our night that we slept together, even though we didn't sleep together. But I tease him on the floor the next day, and I tease him when I say it. I'm like, you remember that time we slept together? Well, actually, Alderman Rohde did not. He didn't spend the night, and he cleared that up too. But again, if not for Alderman Rohde, I would not have been there.
Just like him to just leave.
Right. I would not. He was there.
He was
there. But he didn't spend the entire night like I did. And again, but he was an advocate then. And I'm sure I wouldn't guess for a second that anything's changed. He was such a big advocate then. I'm sure he's a big advocate now. The Covenant House is the only only space created for that in the region, for that matter, you know. So and the work that they do is immeasurable. As a mother of five, now a grandmother, I think about what if it was my child, you know, that was homeless. And to hear the stories and the testimonies the youth and the people that they've been helping, and then you know it's good because they come back and help others. The people that have gone through, they come back and help others. That right there is a testimony alone, which I heard in some of the speakers that you all had. So, again, hearing the story, it just reminded me of that. I mean, up until the next morning when I turned the key in my home, it was just, I get chills thinking about it now, because for me, that was one night. For some children, that's their reality. For some of the youth, that's their reality.
And it just, we talked to last week.
And he
just showed up. It was like 3 a.m. Mm-hmm. And he said somebody answered the phone, and then that woman was there all night, and she said, I'll be here when you wake up.
Made him food.
It was like an immediate response. You wouldn't think that would happen. He was waiting for a voice message. He called, thought, I'm gonna get a voicemail, I'll leave a voicemail, because he had nowhere to go at 3 a.m, which is just unbelievable.
And it gave him not just food and shelter, but love, people who cared about him, and then life guidance with education, with a career. He's a business owner now, and he's on the board at Covenant House, and he was saying, you know, there's only so many beds. And at one point when he had been there for a while, one youth had to be turned away. Because they were all out of beds, and so he volunteered. He got up and left, slept in his car that night, and then was able to find an apartment. And because he knew how it changed the course of his life.
Yeah, these are stories. Again, that's why I just love being here, and I love what you all the platform you all create here. But those are the stories that people need to hear, because sometimes for a person, unless it's their story, they just don't get it. You know, they don't have any, they can't grasp it. But when you hear real life lived experiences and testimonies, and just what you said, Chris, about him saying, just the lady saying, I'll be here in the morning. For some people, I mean, that alone, that assurance, knowing that when you wake up, somebody's going to be there for you. So many people lay down and nobody's there for them then, and they don't have hope of anybody there in the morning. So even with him bringing up stuff like that, you know the difference, and you know the difference that Covenant House makes. I've been a supporter of Covenant House prior to being in position. That changed completely. Just escalated my support for them, and I want to see them succeed and grow even more.
Go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say, I wanted to move on to the new alderwoman who has replaced Kara Spencer. What should we know about her?
Every time I've seen her out in community, she's shown up and presented to be kindred. Just want to be there for community, help community, uplift community. I'm not familiar with the Eighth Ward politics. I'm not familiar with her. I think this is her first as an elected official. I think this is her first tenure. But I don't have anything in me that has any pause about how she's going to show up and serve for those Eighth Ward residents. And then, you know, for me, I try my best. Even on days like yesterday, to work with all of my colleagues, to build their relationships, to be able to work with my colleagues. Because if I'm down there being adversarial to everyone, when am I going to be able to get done for the constituents, first and foremost, of the 10th Ward, let alone for the city of St. Louis? So for me, I welcome Alderwoman Cox. Now, I don't want to mispronounce her name, but I welcome her to the board. She'll be here there Friday, right? She'll be sworn in. That's an exciting time to get started. That 8th Ward is an amazing ward, on the cusp of so much has already happened and is going to happen down there. So I'm excited. I encourage her, and I'm going to be there to help her however I can.
Well, awesome. Alderwoman Shamim Clark Hubbard, it's always good to see you. Thank you for coming in.
Thing?
Oh, yeah, you can.
I'm so sorry, you all, because I know I was late. But there was a meeting that was held to talk about the Union Lindell Bridge. I'm sure you have listeners that think about that Union Lindell Bridge and the projected upgrades they're going to do to it. So there is a meeting today from 4 to 7. It's an open house at the Forest Park Visitor Center. This is coming from BPS and a lot of the transportation mobility planning that's going on in the city. But that Union Lindell Bridge is important. They had a meeting that had low turnout. Why? Because of the tornado. I told them that many of my constituents that live adjacent to that probably were not in the mind space mentally or to deal with that. But so that this meeting today is from 4 to 7 at the Forest Park Visitor Center to come and see the proposed upgrades to the Union Lindell Bridge.
Okay.
Got it.
Thank
Great.
You for letting
Thank
me get
so
that
much.
Out.
No, yeah.
Yeah,
of course. We appreciate you coming in as always. Thank you.
Thank you.
That is Alderwoman Shamim Clark Hubbard with us here, Chris and Amy on KMOX.